Thank you. Well, I see we didn't have any casualties. This is one of the things that's very interesting in discussing radiation is the number of casualties. That becomes important to a Scientologist because as he talks to people, why, he's liable to find he has no audience. And, of course, it's a good exercise in wasting communication. Very good exercise in wasting communication. But it is not a very good exercise in public speaking. One of the more interesting things that happens to a person talking about radiation is the number of pre-clears he makes. He makes pre-clears left and right. Say, well, there's these little wiggle-wuggles that woggle-woggle in space, you know? And they go shooting this way and shooting that way, and people have horrible things happen to them. Next thing you know, your audience starts to say, audience starts to say, you know, I don't feel well. There's something tells me I should be elsewhere. But I have the funny feeling, too, that there's no place to go. No, it is not a popular subject. If it is banned entirely in the newspapers today, it's probably banned because they were losing circulation. But this should tell you, the restimulative character of radiation should tell you that it is a mental subject rather than a physical subject. And that is, to a large degree, the case. It is a mental subject rather than a physical subject. It's all very well for somebody to sit down and figure out where all the little wiggle-woggles wiggle to. You know what I mean by wiggle-woggles? The particles that aren't there. Is it a wave? Is it a particle? I could just see the nuclear physicist. Every few years, you know, the human race in general uses one moment while they're having a very fine time wearing Empress Eugenie hats, and next year they wear no hats, and men wear zoot suit bottom pants, and next year they wear bell bottom pants. You know, they keep changing this way on styles. Well, the style change that takes place in radiation and in nuclear physics is this year it's a wave, next year it's a particle, the year after that it's a wave again. It's very interesting. They have these fashions. I don't know what is in vogue right now. It's probably a particle. But after a while, nobody can find the particle really, so they discover it's a wave, actually, really. It's quite amusing. Cyclotrons go round and round and develop millicuries, they tell me. But they certainly develop problems. It may or may not be true that radiation is a physical subject. This may or may not be true. But it is certainly true that it is a mental subject. Definitely. And that should give you an interesting insight into the world of physics, that they are working desperately with something that is hot on the subject of mental reaction. It might blow down cities. That might or might not happen, but for sure, it blows down psyches. For sure, it blows down psyches. You start talking to somebody about the subject of radiation, he very often goes away and doesn't come back. He said, well, I don't know anything about it. That's right, nobody else does either. That's what he doesn't know. He says, I might better spend my time crocheting or something. It's probably something that somebody else knows about. And that is the only fallacious belief or statement made on the part of the public at large today. Somewhere, somebody knows. It's not true. Somewhere, somebody is pretending he knows, but knows he's pretending. There is no positive knowledge known as radiation. No positive knowledge. That is to say, there isn't a subject which wraps up like elementary physics that you took in high school. Here you have weights and balances. You have velocities. You have expansion of gases. These are all relatively known fields. You understand that? But when you get into the field of nuclear physics, and by the way, I can talk to you as an authority on this subject. I very seldom pose as an authority on anything, but I do happen to be an authority on nuclear physics. You can look at me. Anyway, anyway, I do happen to know enough about nuclear physics to know that it is, at best, a very queasy piece of guesswork. There's a subject, the quanta theory is terribly interesting. It's fascinating. It fascinates everybody. But it's one of the less accurate, less precise, I should say, mathematics. I don't know that people know for sure whether bombs will go off or not. And one time it was a joke amongst nuclear physicists that they had to keep setting off bombs to reassure themselves. Because mathematically, there was no accounting for it. You know how the bomb was built in the first place, don't you? They had a bunch of rods, bars, and so forth, and they built a pile. And they got enough mass there, and they just kept piling up radioactive stuff and piling it up, and pretty soon something felt dangerous. And they put in one more bar. And all of a sudden, something went with a Geiger counter, went brrrr, da-da-da-da. And they say, you know, that is critical mass. Then somebody figured it out mathematically, and he's been a liar ever since. Now, nobody would be more amused about that than the physical scientist himself today. But the fallacy in this whole subject is that somewhere there is somebody who knows all about it. And there is nobody who knows all about it. And the thing which they know least about is its reaction on the physical body. And the thing they know nothing about, and I mean nothing about, outside the sphere of Dianetics and Scientology, is its reaction upon the human mind. That has not even been guessed at as a subject. You don't find any indexes of insanity drawn before and after Hiroshima or anything like that. That is not a worked over subject. Mental reaction to atomic fission exposure to. That is not a subject. But it becomes a subject with us when we discover certain coordinations exist between exposure and mental state. Now, I'm not just running down people. I'm trying to give you, as factually as I can, some sort of estimate of existing knowledge. They know enough to put together something which, by fission and chain reaction, explodes. You would know almost as much as is known if I told you that you've got a plate made out of plutonium here and a plate made out of plutonium here. They're perfectly safe as long as you hold them here and here. But then when you start bringing them together, they start to interact. And if you brought them together like this and stacked them, they would go boom, and you would get what is known as an atomic explosion. Critical mass. In other words, a little bit of it is fairly stable. A little bit more is unstable and unstabilizes other things in its vicinity. That is what is meant by critical mass.
It is not breaching any security classification at all to tell you that an A-bomb is one of the easiest things to build anybody ever heard of. And anybody could read this out of a basic textbook on the subject down at the Library of Congress. And it's merely a few pennyweights of plutonium in this end of something and a few pennyweights of plutonium in the other end of something, and when it hits, they stack. Now they can surround it with beryllium, and they can do this, and they can do that, and they can make it look pretty, and they can put dovetails on it, and they can paint an insignia on the nose of it, but that is about the end of that. The idea of the difficulties of a trigger were only these difficulties. How did you get this reaction to take place a quarter of a mile high? You see, anybody could make it take place on impact. You could take a bow and arrow and put a few pennyweights of plutonium on one end of it and a few pennyweights on the other and then shoot it at a concrete wall. You'd have an atomic explosion. See, it's as easy as that. It takes just a little bit too much of it, and that is too much, and it can't stand it anymore. And so, it explodes. Now, a hydrogen bomb simply uses an atomic fission core to start a fusion reaction. Not terribly difficult in itself to figure out, but what you do is have another order of atomic reaction which is set into action by a primary action. In other words, you get a plutonium explosion to set off another order of explosion. In other words, you get two explosions. Now, a depth charge is the same sort of thing. You can take a depth charge. I know I've got a few small gray hairs there. This just coming into view. You've given them to me with your various critical attitudes. Anyway... I got those factually. You're not responsible for them. Watching some shells go into some depth charges, which are solid TNT. And they're big cans. The reason they call ash cans that you hunt submarines with ash cans is because they probably ash cans. They look just like them. And they're full of solid TNT. It's solid. You can take an axe to it, chop it off. And it's as safe to handle as that. You can chop it off with an axe. There's nothing to it. But you put some granular TNT inside the can, and then you put on the top of that, inside the granular TNT rather, you put a very combustible substance. Lead azide or something like that. I don't know what they're using these days. They change it. Bichloride of something or other. What the devil did they use during the war? I don't know. Lead azide was at one time used as the catalyst, which blows off the granular TNT, which has enough impact to blow off the mass TNT. You got the idea? And shells going into the mass TNT don't explode it. And I watched some enemy shells going into a pile of ash cans one time. I didn't exactly feel... like I was in my mother's arms or something of that sort. Of course, that wasn't too safe either, come to remember. But this hydrogen bomb is more or less the same sort of action. It requires an atomic explosion to set off the secondary explosion, and that's a big explosion. One of these days, they will get a bomb that is set off by a hydrogen explosion, see? Atomic explosion will set off a hydrogen explosion, which will set off a copper explosion or something like that. You can make anything explode if you get anything violent enough next to it. Now, just on the subject of explosions, people are on fairly firm basis. They know how many pennyweight won't mix with how many pennyweight, or how many you have to mix with it in order to get what kind of a reaction, and you have the subject of atomic fission. Now, there are all kinds of isotopes and so on, and side products, you might say, to explosions. There are all sorts of little interesting elements that have been developed that are byproducts of atomic fission, any one of which is interesting enough, which are used in, like, in X-ray work. They make somebody take a a goblet full of stuff that's got a bunch of isotopes in it, and then where they isotope, there's where they lodged, you know. You can get a picture of the fellow's stomach. It doesn't sound sensible, does it? Well, it isn't. Anyhow, who wants a picture of anybody's stomach? I got some good pictures, some good-looking girls, if you want to look those. Anyway, here we have what is known as medical use. It is the use of these side radiations to examine or, quote, treat, unquote, some illness. Now, that is medical atomics. End of medical atomics. Medical atomics actually do not devote themselves to the cure of radiation burns. Radiation burns are a wide, broad subject that has very, very little to do with anything else. What do you do? Well, I don't know. What do you do? And that's no knowledge. I'm not being sarcastic, because believe me, if there'd been a textbook on the subject of medical treatment of atomic fission, which was good, usable, and practical, you would have sent it to me. That's right, and I didn't receive one. Remember about a year ago when I asked everybody everywhere to send me anything I could lay their hands on the subject of atomic radiation? Boy, have I got a library. It's in a country that has no atomic radiation laws, by the way, right now. It's in Ireland. Here, though, we use various atomic substances in order to diagnose or treat. And that is atomic medicine. There is no field very intimately concerned with how do we treat atomic burns. And there is no field at all, what do we do to just treat reaction? What is the reaction? Well, you give the guy some B1. It's that kind of a reaction. You get him quiet and you keep him warm. You treat him for shock. You smear him with various burn substances. You give him a bath. You try to wash the stuff off of him. These actions could be categorized as what the ordinary, you might say, the lay MD, member of the American Medical Association, some lay practitioner, would know about atomic radiation. It's just a burn and that's that. Now, how about this reaction? Does anybody know anything about this reaction? No. There are various lists made up, various lists of things which happen, each list a little bit different than every other list. But what are these lists? Well, they cover nausea, irritation of the mucous membrane, irritation of the lungs, headache, general lethargy, feeling of exhaustion. That's about the list, common list. Person feels prickly all over, feels like he has a terrible case of sunburn. And that's about the end of that. And that is the reaction which most people get. That is the common reaction to atomic fission. Not the reaction of how did the bomb blew up and he blew him against the building and he broke his leg. See? The bomb blew up and burned him to a cinder. The bomb blew up and did this. This is the central attention. See? The bomb blew up and the 300-mile-an-hour hurricane wind dislocated his shoulder, you know. This all presupposes that atomic casualties occur when a bomb blows up. At some proximity to the bomb, very close up, see? Very, very, very near. We're not interested in that reaction. Listen, there aren't enough people left alive after a bomb blows up to worry. Why worry about them? They're mostly dead. There are fringe area casualties that are in terrible condition. But why worry about them? If the people just a little bit further out are so sick that they can't treat them. One of the most brutal pages in medical history was written at Hiroshima. Now, Hiroshima told lies about its casualties, because it said many more people survived than survived, so they could get that much more in terms of medical supplies. They finally come up and invalidated their own figures. The disaster relief agencies were serving them at this rate. They were sending them supplies for all the survivors. So they just said, we got all kinds of survivors, and they got all kinds of supplies. See? Now the Japanese has come forward and said, well, we didn't have anywhere near that number of survivors. Well, now you're dealing with dramatics. You see, that's a dramatic picture. It's one of these airplanes flew through the air, and the searchlights going, and the AK-AK guns firing, you know, and the guided missiles slicing in, and Buck Rogers, space opera, drama, you know. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Except that isn't the problem of atomic fission. Has nothing to do with it. That is so minor as a problem that while it would make a great deal of difference to the inhabitants of those cities, if only this occurred in an atomic war, we couldn't care less. Because what does this mean? It means that the world engaged in war and the inhabitants of certain cities were wiped out. And that would be that. But that is not what occurs. If you were to bomb 20 cities on Earth at this time, it would not be the casualties in those cities which would be the casualties of that atomic attack. It would be another level of casualty. It would be the casualty the whole world around. The secondary reaction. The reaction of people too sick to work. Not quite sick enough to be totally disabled. People nauseated. People dead tired. People without any will to survive at all. And if enough radiation was thrown into the atmosphere to cause this in a broad spread manner, there wouldn't be anybody left to help anybody who was sick. It isn't who would get killed in the bombing of New York. It is what the bombing of New York would do in terms of secondary fallout and ionospheric flash, another phenomenon they have never said a word about, to the inhabitants of Orlando, Florida, Topeka, Kansas, Rome, Italy. So, it's a little planet. There are those right amongst us here who will agree with that fact that it's a little planet. It's a little tiny planet. You go over here across the river and you get in some outmoded U.S. aircraft and you go swish, 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 and you're in Hong Kong. You get another one in Hong Kong, and zoop, you're in Calcutta. You get another one in Calcutta, and zoop, you're back in Washington again. One of your friends says to you, "Hiya, Joe, I haven't seen you for a day or two. Where you been?" If you're in the Air Forces, you say, "Oh, I've been over to Hong Kong." "Oh," he says, kind of bored, "I was over to Mamie's last night." See? It's a great big world if you're walking. But man isn't walking anymore. I was very surprised one day. I looked up and I had a couple of relatives at the doorstep. They walked in, "How are you?" and so forth. They said, "My goodness, where'd you come from?" See? "Oh, we just thought we'd come over and spend the weekend with you." One half the United States away. They just took turns driving. And they were there 16, 17 hours. There was nothing to it. It isn't a big planet. The amount of atmosphere which there is to saturate is not very great. Now, this planet is built with an air layer. Most everybody breathes. There are some people around who are in the valence of a robot who try not to, but they still breathe. And this air layer has a couple of outer spheres. One of these is the stratosphere. Another one's the ionosphere. This air layer is about 300 miles thick, or a little more than the distance between here and Stamford, Connecticut. Not very thick. When you get up there about 16, 17,000 feet, you can't even burn a candle anymore. In other words, 2 or 3 miles straight up, you run fresh out of oxygen. Doesn't support life well. When you get up around 30,000 feet and try to do things without an oxygen mask, you become a little bit tired. Now, the outer sphere, the ionosphere, is more or less just that. There is a reaction from the sun, which is an atomic fissioning ball, which is blowing its silly head off all the time and so gives light. And this comes down and it hits the atmosphere, outer layers of the atmosphere, and a great deal of the radiation, which is in a rather minor form, in the form of photons, comes down and hits this outer atmosphere and slows down, cools down, and so forth, and you walk around. All right, if you were to suddenly park the air layer and get that full effect from the sun, you'd fry. You'd fry. But you are not unacquainted with the phenomenon of radiation. Every time you walk outdoors and say, my, what a beautiful day. Radiation. What made it a beautiful day? Well, there's some atomic fission going on up there in the sky, and it's so bright that you don't ordinarily spend hours looking at it. And it reflects off the trees and everything, and you say, isn't that nice? Nice day. Beautiful, sunshiny day. So you're not unacquainted with it. But there are some of us who have been out on some of the clear deserts of Earth where there was no dust to amount to anything and where the sun came pounding down with relentless fury. And you left your hat off for a few minutes and you had a nice mess of fried brains. There are places like that. Death Valley, California, which is located in the center of Los Angeles. the Sahara, southern Sahara mostly. There are areas of Earth where the air is sufficiently clear and lacking in moisture that a direct exposure to the sun's rays can be all but fatal for any length of time. We get down on the equator, even with the amount of water there is in the air out in the Pacific Islands near the equator. Walk around for a couple of hours without any shirt on, or even with a thin cotton shirt on, and you have the loveliest case of fried shoulders you ever saw. Army, Navy personnel always learn this. Every new unit learns this. They keep learning it all the time. New unit goes into the area, signposted, personnel will not go into the sun without their hats and shirts. Everybody peels down, throws his hat away, sick bay gets full. In other words, it's hot. But it isn't, you might say, atomic fission directly, because there's no other byproduct, you might say, than simply photons. And we're used to those. But we're not used to this other crop of stuff that has been thrown artificially from Earth's surface into the air. There was a volcano aptly called one time Krakatoa. And it went crack. And for 3 years, it blew its whole silly head off. And it threw enough atomic dust into the air to make sunsets of the world brilliantly, glaringly red all the world around for 3 years. It went boom. Just about the same amount of boom as the last when they blew at Bikini. We're dealing in that order of magnitude when we deal with atomic hydrogen bombs. Krakatoa goes boom, blows stuff all over the atmosphere. Same order of magnitude. Bikini goes boom, see? Only there wasn't too much dust there, fortunately. Now what happens when down comes a bomb and boom, what happens? Not just an island disappears. If that was all that happened, we've got lots of islands and the boys could have a good time. We could expend islands and they'd be happy. Blows an island out of existence, and the last one that went off, I think, blew a crater 175 feet deep. But that was nothing. For miles in all directions, there were hurricane winds, hot flash, flame, so forth. But that is on the site. Now, what happens that concerns thee and me? Something else. Two other things. We evidently get a counterflash in the ionosphere. Bomb goes flash here, and then all around the world you get a secondary flash, which they haven't yet inspected or talked about, and I don't know why. Because we were taught this sort of thing years ago, that if you made enough of an atomic flash, if you ionized enough air, that you would get a concatenation of that the world around. All right, how about the other one? How about the dust? How about the particles? How about the moisture-laden particles and other things which go into the atmosphere? Well, the last solution that was being offered by the Atomic Energy Commission was to blow them so high, to blow all these poisonous gases and particles so high that it'd be 10 years before they came down. I think that was a good solution. Where are they going to go in the meantime? Now, where are they going to go? What's going to happen to them? Where do they fall out? We don't even care whether they fall out or not. I'll tell you something that happens to them that you probably know already because they dared write about this one. Strontium 90 comes down and settles on grass. Cattle eat grass. Cattle get milked. Your baby drinks strontium 90. It supplants calcium in the bones and causes cancer of the bone, which I think is not exactly. There's some book on child care, and you know it isn't in there any place you should do that. I looked it up. It does not list strontium 90 as a dietary supplement for children. Now, how much of this strontium 90 is around? Well, you can't take a square or cubic inch of air and then say that has so much, then multiply it by the number of cubic inches of air on Earth's surface and say, well, then it contains so much, you see? Because it's in patches and concentrations which drift around the world and settle here and go there and blow up someplace else. Probably if they didn't blow off any more bombs, probably if no more bombs were blown off, it would be all right. Probably the world would get used to it, the stuff would drift away, and so forth. But I don't think this is in the plans. In the first place, the U.S. is today, oddly enough, the least offender. Now, I've been swearing away at the Atomic Energy Commission. The Atomic Energy Commission, I have heard recently from a couple of my pals, is merely an accounting division. It has nothing whatsoever to do with atomic energy anymore. It's an accounting organization. It's farmed out someplace, and we don't know where. And they pay the bills. The U.S. actually blew off bombs with one purpose in mind, to cut down the loose gamma, to make the bombs efficient. And they kept blowing them off to make them more and more efficient. And they finally succeeded. Actually, the amount of gamma present in a U.S. atomic bomb explosion today is getting so slight as to be negligible. It burns it all up, practically. It's getting very efficient. And they probably won't blow off very many more because they've hit a goal, and that's the goal they were really trying for. Now I'm talking for them a little bit, just so that I be considered to be, have a sort of a broad view. Russia blew some off recently, and they have not yet learned. Russia has not yet learned to control the waste gamma. And boy, when they blow one off, they just splatter gamma all over the globe. Bloom. Similarly, the British, when they blew them off in Australia recently, just blew gamma all over Australia. At Marlinga, a cattle station, 400 miles from the site of the bomb blast, A bunch of cattle were slaughtered. They examined the cadavers, and they found that the amount of gamma in the thyroid of those cattle was almost enough to start up a new energy commission. 400 miles away. Now, that was just on reflective flash. It wasn't on anything else, because it happened immediately. Didn't even have time for the wind to travel 400 miles. You get the idea. But there was tremendous waste gamma in that explosion. Look, are we going to sit around and wait till every nation gets itself educated on how to set off an economical bomb? Is that our goal? Russia's now going to get educated, and they'll eventually have to blow off enough bombs so that they get efficient. And Britain will have to blow off enough bombs so they get efficient. Then France will have to blow off enough bombs. By that time, we'll have given all the bombs to Nasser that he needs. And he'll blow off all the bombs he needs to blow off, probably. Hey, we're up to saturation right now. We're not going up to saturation. We're evidently up there. So right now, I should think the U.S. should go out on an all-out peace offensive. And it'd be all right. Now, what would happen to a world population that was continually bombarded? It would know of a hidden influence. A hidden influence, a hidden menace. Have you got the idea? A hidden menace is somewhere around that we know nothing about. Something goes zzz, and I don't know what it is. I feel funny. I don't know what it is. This year I am having more colds than I had before. I don't know what it is. There must be something wrong with me. I don't feel comfortable anymore. My health isn't so good. That's the reaction you would get very broadly. But the main reaction would be, I'm having a hard time pushing myself to get my work done. And that would be the general complaint. What do you do in something like this? Look, it's not a dramatic action. It's not the kind of action that you go tearing down the street and telling people about. Oh, you got a cold? A-bombs. They say, well, there was an iceberg appeared in the Gulf Stream, and people blamed A-bombs for that. There was a cartoon in the paper the other day, a couple of cavemen sitting out in front of the cave, and one of the cavemen said to the other cavemen, I knew that the invention of those bows and arrows would ruin the atmosphere. See, it's not dramatic. There isn't anything dramatic at all. As a matter of fact, it's a boring, uninteresting subject, except people are getting sick. See, it's a very boring subject. As a matter of fact, there wouldn't even be any reason to talk about it if we didn't have something resembling a cure. Do you realize that? Because everything I've told you right up in the last few minutes, you could have read in Time magazine, which is the official organ of the AMA and the AEC. You could have read all these things in Time magazine, Associated Press. They're not new. The only thing that I'm telling you new is that we have spotted it. We've dead-centered it as the cause underlying a great many pre-clear failures. Now, by the way, we don't have to excuse any failures today. Given a good auditor, given good auditing circumstances, good training on the part of that auditor, if the pre-clear will sit still, goodness, we could even get him over his mother-in-law. Fabulous. Fabulous what we can do. Why did we get so fabulous? How come we had to know so much? Well, I'm afraid we were going uphill against an unknown opponent. And the opponent was that people were feeling tired, groggy. The number of terror stomachs that were showing up. These things that were happening evidently had to do not with the amount of radiation hitting the person, but the amount of mental reaction he was getting from the body sensing the existence of radiation in the atmosphere. So it isn't a quantitative problem at all. The number of rentgen in this room at this moment has nothing to do with it. That there is some has everything to do with it. You get the difference here? Science is busily counting it up and saying 100 rentgen, 200 rentgen, 600 rentgen, and a person in the dye industry can withstand so many hundred, and we're going to put tags on everybody saying this person's had his 10 rentgen, and this person can't watch TV anymore because he's already had 150 rentgen. It's what is the individual reaction to the threat of radiation, and that's what it all comes down to. And when the body individually reacts to the threat of radiation poorly and can't measure up to it and doesn't dare face it and runs away from it, it gets sick and dies. Slowly over how many years? Do you see that we're looking at a different problem? We're looking at a problem in the vicinity of Scientology, not in the vicinity of nuclear physics. We're looking at the problem of man's reaction to radiation exposure. Because from person to person, they get different reactions. And these reactions are different in strength. In other words, it's an individual problem that has to do with how much can you stand of the subject of radiation, not how much can you stand of the subject of particles. Matter of fact, you never heard of anybody getting sick from x-rays, did you, particularly? Oh, once in a while, you say somebody felt a little bit bad on x-rays or something. You would go down with great bravado and expose your chest to an x-ray machine and have yourself a portrait made of your spine, wouldn't you? You wouldn't think twice about it. Well, that's rentgen. X-rays, that's all in this whole picture of radiation. You sit in front of a television set every time that you don't have anything else to do. Well, cheap television sets, I won't mention any names, exude more gamma than bombs. That's why they're cheap. It really takes a lot of extra parts and things to centralize, localize, and keep them from acting as radiators. In other words, if you didn't watch it, you would get them radiating all sorts of odds and ends. You'd get them radiating ultraviolet and gamma and alpha and so forth. And a good television set, you can put a key and an x-ray plate up in front of it, see? Underwriters Laboratories says, I think, 30 days in front of a television set and no exposure of the plate. See, that's a good set. You take some cheap set that was thrown together in a couple of minutes and sold to you for $5. You hold an x-ray plate and a key up in front of it, and then you go out and develop it. Picture, beautiful portrait of the key. And even that wouldn't do very much to you. That wouldn't do very much to you. But it might make you feel sort of odd. It might make you feel strange and restive because you're now starting to confront a quantity of the stuff which would make you aware of its existence. One day you're walking down the street and the wind is blowing and it happens to be just a little bit dusty and you just happen to strike a big patch of radioactive fallout. Just happens to be going by from an atomic bomb explosion back in 1950 or something. You go home and you got chills. You say, I've got a cold. Funny cold, isn't it? Got chills and you feel nauseated and your hair starts to fall out, and you get cancer of the lungs. And somebody says you're sick. Well, hell, you knew that. Well, here you encountered radiation that you couldn't account for. Now, what's the reaction? What is the reaction of the body? Just to get this sordid, horrible subject done with. What is this reaction? The history of the body is a history of the genetic line. It's a history of from amoeba to maybe. It's a history of from seas of ammonia to college professors. All the way along that line, new building blocks were being added, according to the most popular theory. And we got a formed form at last, which was there. Composited from all of its experience, clear on back to its moment of inception at the beginning of life on this planet. That's its genetic blueprint, we call it. That genetic blueprint, however, unfortunately, according to tests which have been made in Scientology, does not begin with the formation of this planet. It begins with the formation of this universe and goes back earlier than that. But from the moment life appeared on this planet forward until now, there has been no excessive amount of radiation. And now there's some radiation. There have evidently been life forms on many planets in this universe. This is parascientology, I admit, but we have to enter it. There has been life form generated in planets here, there, throughout space. And some of that experience, oddly enough, is evidently available to the current genetic line. And that experience adds up this way. I ask you to make this test if you have an E-meter. It's quite an amusing test. Just ask them what radiation means according to the dial. Ask anybody, when was the last time? Count millions of years, billions of years back to the last time he had anything to do with radiation. And you go off the genetic line of this planet onto other genetic lines on other planets which are earlier. And every genetic line ended with only one thing happening. Somebody discovered atomic energy. No planet. That's what it means to the body. It says no playing field. It says why try? It says let's quit and get it over with. It says why wait around? It said there'll be no future generations. The generations which you care to form today will not live to form other generations, so why even try? And so we get almost the total of atomic radiation reaction on the body, first and second dynamic reactions. You cut out the second dynamic, you get a first dynamic. In other words, if we cut sex out, the second dynamic, we cut sex out entirely, then there is only this form now. See, we've got this body now, and then that's all. There'll be no future generations. Now, why people go around and say that it has something to do with mutations, I wouldn't know. And say that the main worry about it is the queer kind of progeny it creates. This is all fairy tale stuff. There's just nothing to this. It's just, boo. It's, life will try to procreate, but it knows it can't. And it says, we must now live as ourselves only in the body which we now have. And this is the last body on the track. So boy, does that body get important. It gets so important that you don't dare do anything with it. It's too valuable to be moved around. You might stub its toe. It's too valuable to be worked. And so, we get a disintegration of the society because it isn't a third dynamic that goes wild. It just disappears. The second dynamic chops, and we're left with the first dynamic. We're left with an atmosphere and a world of every man for himself. And that's why the world doesn't end with a bang. It ends with a whimper. Now, what could anybody do about this? We've stated a problem. Very cheekily here, we've stated a problem, by the way, which has not been solved by life for a long, long while. It's never been solved by life in this universe that we know anything about. I let you consult your E-meters, let you work with somebody who doesn't know anything about this and get times when radiation appeared in terms of years and times of exposure to it, what it means, so forth. You'll get these same answers that I'm giving you now, although they're out of apparent Scientology. They are achieved directly off of an E-meter, same as a lie detector. You get these as the reaction of the physical body to radiation. It says no more family, no more family lines, no more children, no more life on this planet. The body we have is the last body. We'd certainly better take care of it. We'd better take care of it so well that we dare not do anything with it. It can be harmed. It can be hurt. It's very probably the last one we're going to get. Atomic radiation has now appeared, and there is no future generation. If we raised kids now, they might keep going for years, but only for years. Sooner or later, somebody's going to go mad and hit the button. They're going to start blowing things up, and if the atmosphere is close to saturation now, and still livable, see, I mean just saturated in terms of livability, we can live in this atmosphere. If it goes much higher than that, we won't be able to live in this atmosphere. And that'll be the end of that. Well, we face a very interesting future. If the body believes this, if this is true, if those researchers are not in error, man is certain to use radiation in warfare. And if he does, that's that. It isn't a weapon. It's the same as a $2 Spanish pistol with its bullet chamber made out of pot metal. You fire it, off goes your hand and head. It might not do anything to the fella out there, but it's certainly going to ruin the fellow who fires it. You got the idea. That's not a weapon, then, is it? Well, as long as people continue to consider this a weapon, and look at it as a weapon, do nothing about it as a weapon, then that'll be that. But nations do commit suicide. They could be convinced of this, and nations, however, do commit suicide and have, in our memory and time, committed suicide. I point out to you that the Japanese nation knew perfectly that if it declared war against the United States, it would be defeated. It knew this well before it went to war. There was hardly any hope of victory at all. And let me call to your attention, speaking of revolvers, that Russian roulette is popular in Russia. You know how they spin the cylinder and with one bullet in the chamber and pull the trigger? Say, I lived that time. That's Russia. I have nothing against Russia. Wouldn't shove anything against them. But Russia may or may not do anything. The United States may or may not do anything. They might just go on test programs from here on out until we all kick the bucket. Now, this would be a gruesome view. This would all be an unsolvably gruesome view, and you would all have a perfect right to sneeze and wheeze and get re-stimulated and sit down and feel sad and say, my God, why is Ron backing up the hearse to this degree? If there was nothing we could do about it. But there is something we can do about it. We actually have in our possession, in an experimental form, a highly effective preparation called dianazine, which we have worked out, which is composed of various minerals and chemicals which cause the body to react to all of the radiation it's been avoiding. Evidently, dianazine permits the body to react to radiation it has already accumulated. Now, radiation is only dangerous because it's cumulative. And if you can knock out its cumulative effect, you can laugh at it. Well, we've got a pill that you could throw out to people by the bucket load. Actually, what it does is show them they can confront radiation and laugh at it. That's one thing it does. Another thing, it actually apparently burns out and discharges the engrams of radiation. It's like old-time guck did. It'll discharge an engram, guck will. And this stuff evidently discharges the accumulated effects of radiation. But it does something else. It does something else. You see, the body knows how horrible it is to be sick with radiation. It's miserable. A guy gets sick at his stomach and his headaches and he can't move. And he can't get up any ambition. He can't go anyplace. He can't do anything. Ooh. How would you like to be nauseated all the time? Wouldn't be so good, see? And the body actually is flinching. And it's flinching so hard that it's pulling radiation right in on it. You understand that? You get the body flinching hard enough from radiation, it pulls all the radiation in the bank in on itself. Is there any radiation really in the bank? In the reactive mind? The mental image pictures of a person, does that really carry any radiation at all? No. Look, a gamma ray can't be stopped by a concrete wall. What do you mean that a human body will stop it? You can take a 4-foot concrete wall and throw gamma at it and it comes right on out the other side. How about a human body? How thick is that? That's not very thick, is it? A few inches. You mean to say it'll stop gamma? Puh. It won't. But the gamma going through makes an engram. And the body clutches the picture. And the picture is what it has confused with the radiation. And out of this confusion, it makes itself sick, sterile, and knocks itself off, if you please. Now you make the body turn around by running on radiation, by turning it on, turning on radiation sickness and running it out, making the body actually confront those engrams. And what does the body do? First it says, no, 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 won't look. It's amazing. After a little while, I'll tell you some of the adventures we've had on the staff with this. They'll be saying, no, I just don't want anything to do with that stuff. That's the most horrible stuff. It's terrible. Supposing it hung me up in that. Argue, 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 argue. Go on, take it. Well, all right, if you say so. We were taking double handfuls of pills. I know, in 3 minutes, I'm going to feel like the devil. He didn't get any reaction at all that morning. Now, the body turns around and faces the stuff. And the people who have been on this, on staff, they couldn't care less at this time. They probably are wondering why I'm even talking about it. Doesn't affect them. Why? The cumulative effects of radiation are blown. The amount of re-stimulation is gone. These people could probably stand up against an atomic bomb blast and get knocked all around and bruised, but probably walk out of it and say, whew, that was awfully hot. Let me see. Now, where was I hurt? In other words, we found the one thing that a body won't confront. Atomic bomb blast. That's the one thing it has never before on the track actually, factually confronted. It's never turned around and said, what do you know? Somebody's invented fission. Lock him up. Instead of that, the body habitually has said, somebody's invented fission. I won't look. You'll see people do that in theaters. They show a picture of an atomic bomb before it was under censorship. They show a picture of an atomic bomb blowing up. People hiding their head. What do they mean they're hiding their head? What's the matter with them? From what? A picture on a motion picture screen? It won't bite. And yet, people hide their heads and walk out. Now, you can talk to people about this, and they're actually better off knowing it than not knowing it. They're in better health just knowing what they won't confront. You got that? That's the truth of the matter. So blanket censorship on this thing would be all that it would take to knock off the rest of the human race. All the human race has got to do is look at it, confront it, And it's a rather silly thing that they won't confront nothing going through a nothingness, but they won't. Take some pills, turn on the burn, run out their accumulation of the last 9 to 11 years, and say, skip it. And that would be the end of the danger of radiation. So I think this is worth knowing about, don't you? Okay, I'll tell you more later. Thank you.